The gangs of Latin America are brutal, and so are the tactics police use against them. 2 weeks ago, more than 2,000 police and soldiers with drones, helicopters and armoured vehicles stormed the favelas of Rio de Janeiro at dawn to capture, they hoped, the leaders of the gang known as Comando Vermelho, the Red Command. The result was a slaughter that's provoked local and international rage. At a time when Brazil is presenting itself on the world stage as hosts of the COP Climate Summit. To explore this contradiction, we have turned to Ana Lankes, Brazil Bureau Chief of The Economist. And Ana joins us from Rio. Ana, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thank you for having me.
Ana, first, explain to us the favelas and why they are so... why they are so enormous, so full of crime, et cetera, et cetera. What are they?
So the favelas are slums. They're high density, low income areas with mostly black or mixed race residents. Brazil has a population of around 200 million people, and some 16 million, or 8% of the population, live in favelas. And some of these communities are run by criminal groups who extort locals and charge them for basic services like access to electricity, water, and gas. And they kill locals who disobey them. So they make the law in the regions that they control. So, for example, if you're caught stealing without permission from a gang leader, you can be put in car tires and the tires set on fire. So favelas are often very dangerous places. And police, especially in Rio, feel that they have a license to go in and use extreme violence to put an end to the violence that goes on there.
Tell us about the Red Command.
So the Red Command is one of Brazil's oldest criminal groups. It was founded in the 1970s during Brazil's military dictatorship. And the dictatorship sent common criminals and persecuted leftists to a prison on an island here called Ilha Grande, or Big Island. It's like Alcatraz, but 10 times worse. And the conditions there were so terrible that these groups bandied together to form a kind of protection organization to protect each other from rape and assault within the prison and to share scarce resources. And pretty quickly, they dropped any pretense of like leftist ideology and just became a drug trafficking group. And this happened during the kind of first boom of the drug trade, the globalization of the drug trade in the 1980s. So today the Red Command has around 30 to 40,000 members throughout Brazil, and it has a very diversified portfolio. So they do drug trafficking, but they also are involved in arms trafficking, selling counterfeit cigarettes and spirits, mining illegal gold, fuel theft, all sorts of things. So we don't know exactly how much they make, but it's thought to be, you know, in the hundreds of millions or billions a year.
Is there any sort of informal relationship between these gangs and the government?
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's not even informal. So the only reason that these gangs can survive is because they have links, not just to the government, but to security forces in Rio. I'll give you like a quick map of gangs in Rio. So you have like the Red Command, but you also have lots of little other gangs, and you have militias, so paramilitary groups that were founded by retired police officers and soldiers to combat the drug gangs. And then they themselves became extortionists and drug traffickers. So the militias, which are the ones founded by former police officers, often have very close ties to politicians. And actually, one of the politicians they're thought to have some sort of friendly relationship with is Jair Bolsonaro and his sons. Jair Bolsonaro was Brazil's former president.
The great friend of Donald Trump.
Yeah, the great friend of Donald Trump, who's just been sentenced to 27 years in prison for organizing a coup. So the militias and the drug gangs try to get people elected to the local government in Rio so that they can, you know, rule with impunity. And another thing is that the gangs and the militias often only have the weapons that they have, and these are war, you know, warlike weapons, because corrupted police officers and soldiers sell them these weapons. So there's all sorts of complicated relationships between the gangs, the militias, politicians, security forces, and that makes it really hard to go after these groups.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to Anna Lankes, The Economist's Brazil bureau chief, about the gangs of the favelas of Rio. Anna, these close links make me wonder why something like Operation Containment was even mounted.
So that's a good question. I mean, there are links between politicians and gangs. There are also some, you know, obviously good people trying to get rid of the gangs. But in this case, Operation Contention, it looks like a very politically motivated operation. So next year, Brazil hosts a general election. It's a huge election. So, you know, half of the Senate will be renewed and all of the lower seats in Congress and lots of the state legislatives and the governors of Brazil's 27 states. And the governor of Rio, Cláudio Castro, he can't run for re-election as governor. So he wants a seat in the Senate. And his approval ratings were not looking so great. And I think he basically just needed like something to give his campaign a bit of mojo, a bit of oomph. And this is that. I mean, what these operations generate is, you know, headlines. People love them. They're real like crowd pleasers. The rest of the world and human rights groups were horrified by the violence that was used by the police in this last operation. But more than half of Brazilians supported it, and more than 80% of favela residents supported this operation. So I think that this is politically motivated. Another important thing to mention is that, like I said, Jair Bolsonaro, he was a former president, and he's kind of the leader of the right, but he was just sentenced to jail. So the right is a little bit adrift. And I think they figured out that crime is voters' main issue and that the left-wing government is seen as soft on crime. So I think that this will be their main thing going into the election next year. Next year is people will also choose the president. So I think this is very political.
Tell us what we know of the police action in this operation. How many people were killed? What was the upshot of it all?
So what happened was that the operation, they were supposed to carry out 100 arrest warrants against members of the Red Command, who they'd been tracking for several months after a tip-off by an anonymous whistleblower. And so they had 100 arrest warrants issued by Rio's public prosecutor. And they were supposed to go after Doca, who's the head of the Red Command. So those were like the aims of the raid. But instead, what happened is that it got really messy and it became like a bloodbath. Like there were scenes of urban warfare. So as the police approached the neighborhood, and you mentioned the number in your intro, there were 2,500 military and civil police officers. So as they entered the neighborhood, the gangs tried to slow their entry by setting cars and buses alight to create barricades. And the gangs launched grenades from drones. I mean, it tells you the kinds of weapons that they have. So they launched grenades from drones. Many people from the favela started running away into the nearby jungle, many of the suspects. But police officers from the special operations unit were waiting for them at the top of the hill, and they shot anyone running there. So all in all, four police officers were killed. One of them had just been trained. This was like his first operation. So four police officers were killed and at least 117 inhabitants of the favela. And another 120-odd people were arrested. So this was the most lethal police raid in Brazilian history, which is a country very accustomed to extreme police violence. One thing that Rio security forces have said is that most of the people killed had proven links to the Red Command. So like 100 of them had criminal records, 60 of them had active arrest warrants. And police also captured, you know, 200 kilograms of cocaine, 100 rifles. And nine like big regional leaders of the Red Command were killed or arrested. But the main guy, Doca, managed to escape. So kind, in some ways, you know, it failed. And the brutality of it really left a lot of people, especially in the human rights world, with a very bad taste in their mouth. I mean, in one case, a 19-year-old was effectively decapitated. His head was blown off because he was shot at such close range. And a third of the victims were under the age of 25. You know, one was 14, another was 17. And then the way the police did it, you know, they killed all these people in the jungle. The official death toll on the first day was 64 people. And then the relatives of those who'd been killed went into the jungle and came out with so many bodies that the death toll within a day was, you know, 117. So what this tells you is that the police in Rio often don't do a very good job. They don't clean up the crime scenes. They don't keep forensic evidence. They just left the bodies there, and the bodies were recovered by the residents themselves. There's also questions about whether some of these were summary executions because yes. some people had their hands tied, you know, this kind of thing.
Yep.
So yep. more information and evidence needs to be presented before we know what really happened.
Anna, is there an argument that so powerful are these gangs that this is not civil policing as we understand it, that it is more like warfare?
So that's interesting that you ask that, because that is what the government of Rio and what Donald Trump want to that's how they want to describe this. They want these groups to be officially labeled as narco-terrorist groups. And after the police operation, Argentina and Paraguay, which both have right-wing governments cozy with Trump, labeled the Red Command and their main rival in Brazil as terrorist organizations. But I think there's an important distinction to be made. So far, Brazil's government has refused to call these terrorist organizations because under Brazilian law, terrorists need to have political ends, and they have to have ideological, ethnic, or religious motivation to cause that terror. Whereas in the case of the drug gangs, they are terrifying, and they exercise quite a lot of political control in their neighborhoods, but the main objective is profit. They just want to make money. And as a result of that money, they can corrupt some institutions. But that doesn't mean that their main motivation is political.
This is business.
Yeah, exactly. This is business. And as long as there's a market for drugs and arms and whatever, they will exist.
I understand that the president of Brazil was shocked by this raid. But is there any possibility that there will be an inquiry or a commission of some kind to investigate what's gone on?
Yes and no. I mean, yes, because the Supreme Court has asked Rio security forces to provide like much more information, including videos from body cameras and forensic evidence of the bodies that were, you know, retrieved in the forest, and more information on the arrest warrants that were issued before the raid. So the Supreme Court has been asking for way more information. Also, the day after the operation, the Senate opened a parliamentary inquiry on organized crime to kind of find out more about how organized crime works in the country. And the federal police sent some forensic analysts. We'll probably find out more in the next few weeks. But the truth is that police violence is really, really common in Brazil, and especially Rio. And every time these kinds of massacres happen, there are some court rulings and there's, you know, some intent to find out what really happened. And then it all goes back to the way it was. And there's another violent police operation, and people clap their hands and they really like it. So nothing really changes. Just to give you an example, there were two really important court rulings in recent years on police violence in Brazil. One in 2017 from the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, and one in 2020 from Brazil's Supreme Court. They basically ordered the police to like wear body cameras and make sure that police abuses were investigated by an independent body rather than the police themselves. And like, that just didn't really happen. It's basically ignored.
Yep, yep. Is it true that the police are paid bonuses for killing people?
Yeah, so this is totally mad. In September, Rio State Legislature passed a bill that would pay like huge bonuses to police who kill suspects in raids. So that's obviously just an incentive to kill people. But also there's a recent law that like gives a bonus to people who seize weapons during raids. But as I've already mentioned, many of the weapons in the hands of the gangs are sold to the gangs by corrupt, you know, police officials or people in the security forces. So that's another incentive to just sell them more weapons. So this stuff is just ridiculous. And it only happens because they're crowd pleasers, a kind of Wild West bounty goes down well with people, but it doesn't actually work. These kinds of police operations are very common in Latin America, where rulers like to govern with an iron fist, but they're super ineffective.
This is not just a matter of Brazil.
No, this is very common in the region. There's a lot of like what you can call security populism. So leaders like to use what's called mano dura, which means iron fist. And what that involves is like calling a state of emergency, sending the army onto the streets and into prisons, you know, suspending civil liberties for a while, this kind of thing, throwing loads of people in jail, like pre-trial detention. But a lot of the time, these tactics just make the problem worse, even as they appear to solve it. So I'll give you an example. It's very common in Latin America to like throw people in jail without like having convicted them first. So they're just, it's pretrial detention. And this means that the prisons are mega overcrowded, like in almost every country in Latin America. In the past 20 years, the population of the prisons has grown much more than like normal population growth in the actual population. And prisons are like recruiting grounds for the gangs, because in order to survive in a terrible prison in Latin America, you have to join a gang.
Yes.
So the gangs are just swelling. I mean, this is really counterproductive stuff.
And people love these raids.
They're not perturbed by the raids. No, and you know what? I kind of, sometimes the discourse of like the left and the government here in Brazil can be really annoying for people who experience the violence of these gangs every day. Who live with it. Because, you know, the response of the left is usually to say, oh, we need to invest in education and development in the favelas so that people are not recruited. Yes, sure, that's true. But that doesn't solve the issue right now, which is that there's extreme violence in the favelas and people who are just trying to go about their daily lives are victims of it. So you need to have a smarter approach that uses more intelligence and is more targeted. And especially that goes after the money made by the gangs. That really hurts them. You know, where it hurts the most is the money, because that's the only reason they exist.
Because Brazil, it's a business.
It's a business.
It's a business.
Exactly. And it's a huge amount of money. So Anna, that's what they need to go after.
Anna, thank you so much for joining us on Late Night Live. I've been speaking to Anna Lancas, The Economist's Brazil bureau chief, about the violence of the favelas and the violence of the police.